this was just before the Senate almost passed it.
It lost by 2 votes.
After 5 days of debate?
Yes, is that it?
Mm-hmm. And an 11th hour appeal by the president.
And that was an eloquent and marvelous speech. As I said, we've had it so many times. Mimi Grafton sent over the country as far as we could. So that was really the culmination of the battle. So and I noticed in this book it says that hereafter, having gotten the president, we turned our picketing to the Senate because we were, that was our next obstacle. We were 2 votes short. Mm-hmm. The president first went up and made the speech, then over in Versailles, he got us and tabled back, you know, the last vote. Senator Harris of Georgia.
Yes, for the final vote. All this time, you were continuing your...
We continued to picket now the Senate because the president was no longer...
Oh.
We had no longer any enemy there.
Did you move the locale of your picketing over to the Capitol or to the Senate office building?
No, we just picketed it on the steps of the Senate office building.
I see. Right up to the time the president made his speech, you were burning his words in the park.
And, yes.
Did you personally participate in any of that?
No, but we had a very beautiful picket line, and I showed you the photograph of it. We went out from our headquarters to hold one of these speeches on Lafayette's statue. We began, Lafayette, we are here. And each time the person got out, Lafayette, we were here, she was promptly arrested.
Oh.
And I was, I suppose, managing it, seeing they got there and everything.
Yeah.
But I wasn't up making a speech. And it was very beautiful, these girls that made these speeches. And so suddenly I was just arrested. Because some policeman came along and said, just arrest me because I was obviously engineering this outrageous affair.
Oh.
There they were, you see, taking the... Can you see them?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Each one holding up a banner, up the present words, putting a little flame and Lafayette, we're here.
Oh, yes.
And she was pulled out.
Yes, indeed. She's holding it up very much like pictures of boys burning their draft cards today. They hold it up high and
yes.
Put the match to it.
I think
but they're all dressed in white,
yes.
Flowing gowns. You know, it's a beautiful pageantry of it that's so different from the way our protests
are. That really is lovely, don't you think?
It is.
I mean, it sounds sort of violent, burning the president's words, but you see it was not particularly so.
And there's not a big mob. They're all evenly spaced, much as they might be in a pageant.
But I remember I was out way, way far out, and suddenly was arrested.
Oh.
I think maybe that's the time we were taken to the old brick, the old abandoned workhouse.
Oh. Were you arrested more than twice? I mean, more than 2 or 3 times?
I think I was arrested 3 times.
Yeah.
And the one you told me, I think, was the last, the one you were. And I remember this one, which I hadn't gone out to be arrested, but I was. And I was in prison, I think. Because I remember being in the old abandoned workhouse. Elsie Hill was in that prison with me. And also Hazel Hunkins. And then I think the first time was when I was in with Mary Windsor, as I said, who made the prayer.
Oh, yes.
I thought it was Lucy Branham, but you read she was in with me the last time. Well, now we've gotten that date fixed.
Yes.
And his speech.
Right.
Now, the only remaining thing are the 2 votes.
All right.
First, and the vote, I know when the vote was in the, I know exactly when to look, the vote in the Senate was in June. Because that sent it on the states to ratification, so we all know that.
That was
June 1919.
The amendment passed the House January 10th, 1918 by a vote of 274 to 136. a two-thirds majority with one vote to spare. Exactly 40 years to a day from the time the suffrage amendment was first introduced into Congress.
Now, what day was that?
Well, that was January 10th, 1918, and that was the session that the Senate failed to pass it by two votes.
Okay. That was January, yes. Well, then the House met again and voted on in them. In the spring of 1919, I think.
Yes, there was an interlude of 7 months, apparently.
I think the House voted on it twice that spring.
Senate, you had a mass meeting in Palm Beach, Florida. And you remember Colonel William Boyce Thompson, who was chairman of the Ways and Means of the Republican National Committee.
He gave us $10,000.
Yes, and he said the story of the brutal imprisonment in Washington of women advocating suffrage is shocking and almost incredible. I became accustomed in Russia. Let's see, he had been a member of the United States Red Cross mission in Russia. To the stories of men and women who served terms of imprisonment under the Tsar, and so forth. And he says, I wish now to contribute $10,000 to the campaign for the passage of the suffrage amendment through the Senate. $100 for each of the pickets.
Yes, indeed. I never forget it. And they telephoned up and said, how many pickets had there been? Because he was giving $1,000 or $100 for every picket. I've forgotten what it was.
Oh,
it was
yeah?
Imprisoned.
They telephoned to you?
I don't know whether it was to me, but anyway, to the headquarters.
And did you know right off the top of your head how many
No, we had to scurry around and find out how much it was. This was Mrs. Lawrence Lewis, who's our national treasurer, you know.
Yeah.
And she organized a meeting down in Palm Beach.
Oh.
And didn't know Mr. William Boyce Thompson at all, but he walked into the meeting.
My goodness.
And then she telephoned up. I suppose it was she, because she got up the meeting and asked us to find out quickly. We didn't know why, I believe, how many people had ever been in prison. So we quickly got the number and phoned down to her. And then she went to Mr. Thompson and said, this is the number. So then it came to 10,000.
I see you had the support of William Randolph Hearst in editorials calling the Senate.
Always from William Randolph Hearst, always. Always, never failed.
Well, Phoebe Hearst.
You know his mother, Phoebe Hearst.
Yeah.
Was one of the great women of the country and was a great leader in the suffrage campaign. And when we formed our little branch out in California, she was a friend of Mrs. William Kent and helped with forming our Women's Party branch.
Oh. Yeah, well, that makes sense, because they were close.
And you know that set of furniture we have down there was given by Mr. Hearst. You know that, don't you?
Oh, where?
In our living room.
Belmont House?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it was made by slaves down on a plantation in Louisiana. And Mrs. Hillis had always been in political life because her father was the great Secretary of State, Senator Byard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Secretary of State Byard. Great, one of the greatest secretaries of state we've ever had because of his building up a friendship with Latin America. And so she grew up in that political atmosphere, and so did William Randolph Hearst. And so she'd known him since childhood. So when she became a national chairman of the Women's Party, he gave her a check one day, I think it was $1,500, but a quite large check. And he said, now I wish you'd put something in your new headquarters that you're just getting. This one up on Capitol Hill. It was our original one. We bought it, the old Capitol, in memory of my mother and Phoebe Hearst. So Mrs. Hillis went down to Louisiana and she bought the set of furniture which is there in that living room. Two sofas and big chairs and little chairs and so on. And she got a set of furniture been made by the slaves on one of the plantations down there. And we've had it recovered twice. But anyway, when we were recovering it the last time, Mrs. Longwell, and I think you must know all this, went to Mr. Hearst and wrote to Mr. Hearst, and then went personally to his office in New York to say, since this was set, that your father, the present William Randolph Hearst, your father gave in memory of your grandmother, and it's getting pretty dilapidated, and we would like to, if we can get a modest estimate for you, putting it back in shape, if you would be willing to pay for it. And she thinks that she was under the impression that the reply was yes, find out what it will cost and so on. I don't think she ever saw him personally, but I think this was the reply she got from his office. And so then she got an estimate and sent it up, and the reply came back very cold. Everything connected with donations from the Hearst family is in the hands of a Hearst Foundation or something. And no interest was manifested at all. So finally, Mrs. Longwell and her friends, Winona McGuire and some others, and Winona McGuire's sister, mainly, I think, paid for it themselves. So he was always, the Hearst paper always helped us. And Mrs. Hearst was always a member, that is, Mrs. William Randolph Hearst.
I think I have found that first attempt to force a vote in the Senate. It occurred on May 19th, 1918, and this was when Friends interceded, when it was shown that not enough votes were pledged to secure passage. So they postponed it.
That's the time I told you Maud Young and I went down and talked to these two men, Curtis and Gallinger. That's right.
Yeah. And oh, yes. And it says the Republicans, led by Senator Gallinger, provided skirmishers from time to time. And the administration was accused on the floor of blocking action. Do you think there were still two votes lacking when it was up for a vote in September of 1918, when after the president's address to the Senate?
Well, of course, I guess everybody knew there was.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Why couldn't you have postponed the vote that time, too?
Well, we didn't postpone it the first time. It was, the Republicans thought it was better, and they postponed it.
The vote was 62-34.
When?
You lost by two votes on October 1, 1918. So on October 1, 1918, it lost in the Senate. Then on February 10th, it was introduced in the Senate in 1919, and it lost by one vote. It was reintroduced, and in the meantime, Woodrow Wilson came back from Europe.
I know, but I would get, if you could possibly get to the House.
All right, but in this one, it.
Because he went back again to Paris, and it was from Paris he cabled it.
I know. What I wanted to get down, Alice, was that step on the on voting of Senator Gay of Louisiana, that apparently they changed the wording a little bit.
Yes, and so we
to get his vote.
I know, but they did, but it was on states' rights, you see, again.
Oh, and the National Women's Party.
We would have nothing to do with it.
Oh. So it never came to a vote. Because Senator Weeks of Massachusetts, who was a Republican anti-suffragist, objected. And then Senator Sherman of Illinois, a Republican suffragist, objected. And
this
then
is all the Senate.
And then the session closed, so it did not pass the Senate. Okay.
Yes. Now we begin. No, I don't want that one. Then.
You want the 1919 Equal Rights?
Suffrage.
Okay. I'm going to read from your editorial that says, on January 10th, 1918, the vote on the suffrage amendment in the House of Representatives was 274-136, only one vote more than required. And on May 21st, 1919, and that's for this issue, it was 304-89, 42 votes more than the required two-thirds. Again, the greatest support for the amendment is from the West.
But they don't give they must be in that article, and that's the editorial, they must give an account of it, I think.
Yes. You want me to go ahead and read it?
No, not of the editorial. They were just explaining, but
All right, you more or less are analyzing the support
by
states.
No, but I think there they will give it.
Now, here's the introduction of it. It was introduced by 6 members in the House.
No, I don't mean that. Is that when it passed?
Yes. Tells about it being referred to the Women's Suffrage Committee. Wait a minute.
Because when
you're particularly interested in the House? Now?
I'm very interested in the House because that's when they struck out the seven years, you see.
Two resolutions.
Mr. Guard.
Okay.
Is Mr. Guard right there? Because I know it was the bottom of the first column.
Mr. Guard?
There
are two resolutions. One is, this is in the Senate, though.
Well, don't do the Senate, because...
See, this article handles both houses, kind of back and forth. In the House, there were no hearings. On Tuesday morning, May 20th, the first meeting of the committee was held, and it was decided to report it favorably.
I don't think you have the.
It doesn't mention.
You have in the article I'm talking about.
Now, why don't you go ahead and tell what.
Now you're up at ratification.
In the House. Well.
No ratification for the altogether.
Don't you want to go into that 7-year clause that was.
I just thought I would
attempted?
Show it to you. I was going to try to show it to
but
you.
But it's not in here.
But I can't. It doesn't seem to be in this issue.
So I think you ought to tell it to me and let me get it down on tape. Because it's something that needs to be hunted up later, and we need to
well,
have a
record. Well, I'll tell you all I can remember,
all right.
That when it did come up, whatever date, and I don't know where the date was, I rather thought it came up twice in the House.
In May 19th.
And it was the first time that it came up, after the new session began, you know, with the Republicans. That
the
prohibition having just been, amendment just having had the 7 years put in. Mr. Guard of Ohio arose and just moved the addition of the words provided within, ratified within 7 years. And the whole chamber resounded with cries of shame, and it was voted down. And then on the next page was a little statement that we had in, I don't see why I can't find it here, by Mrs. Wadsworth. It was the top of the next page. And. But I had it copied so many times, the reason I remember in Washington to use it with people I couldn't seem to move very well. But the at the top of the next page was a statement by Mrs. Wadsworth withdrawing all further efforts to defeat the amendment, having lost the 7 years. Because, as you said, with no time limit, the women can keep on and on and on, they'll undoubtedly ratify. There's nothing further we can do. We've lost our campaign, which was trying to show these women how they were misjudging the importance of the 7 years they were putting on, trying
later
to
later on in the ERA.
No, these present women were trying to put on, how they were making a mistake. Perhaps they would realize if they saw that the leader of the opposition to withdraw all opposition, so we didn't meet any opponents at all from this organization against the votes for women when we tried to ratify. That's all there was to that.
Okay. And,
now with ratification, we went along fairly quickly, I think. We began immediately the very next day and appointed a committee headed by Mrs. Lawrence Lewis to head the ratification campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And we went, the states that we had to go to, we went to from the national headquarters, the states where the campaign was very easy, such as I remember Iowa, where Senator Cummins of Iowa said to us, you give me one postage stamp and that's all the campaign will cost you. Because he was a very powerful man in the state of Iowa, apparently, and powerful politically. And so he said, I'll have this brought immediately before the legislature and you won't have anything to do. So we didn't go into Iowa. Iowa ratified right away. If I remember, Wisconsin was the first state to ratify, I think it was. And the father of the president of the suffrage organization came down, his name was James, came down to Washington with the ratification to get it in number one.
Oh.
And so it went along pretty happily. But we lost, for instance, in some states. And finally, when we lost in Connecticut, we lost in Virginia, we lost in Maryland, we lost in Delaware.
Yes. And that Delaware battle was quite a long, heartbreaking one, because there for about 3 or 4 weeks, it looked like Delaware was going to be the state to have the distinction of being the final state to ratify and put it into effect.
Well,
and then it fell through.
When we're getting down to the very end, of course, it dragged along, because we finally got it, as you know, through President Wilson conferring with the governor of Tennessee and asking him, as a fellow Democrat, to call the legislature. And then that was a long and very dramatic campaign. I think maybe Mrs. Irwin gave it in this book.
Yes.
In Tennessee, where they first said, if I remember rightly, they did not pass it in the beginning, and then we could then reassemble and did pass it August 28th. Well, that's about the essence of the ratification campaign.
Yeah. And
it was August 28th, 1920, and it went through, it was submitted to the states in June 1919. So it took us from June 1919 to August, very little over a year.
Mm-hmm. And that was just in time for the women to vote.
Yes, and it's...
for the presidential election.
And Harding had come in, you know. I don't mean to come in, but it, the fight was between Harding and Cox, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Harding was the Republican candidate. So we went out and had deputation to him, deputation to Cox, and all those things.
Well, let's see, how many states is it? 36?
38.
38 that it took then, and you
no,
got...
No, it's 36 it took then, 38 it takes now.
Yeah. And you got 35 fairly rapidly. Why did it take so long to get that last state? Was there more resistance?
I wouldn't say it went so rapidly, but it went along. But we tried in a good many states to finally consummate it when we got up to 35. Of course, that was the place. That's exactly what the 7 years can do to us, you see.
Yeah.
They can hold you off and get enough counter states,
yes,
and enough defeats to defeat you.
In the ERA. Exactly.
And I do want to have that preserved about that vote, and when we're through all this, I'll take it and
yeah, I hope we can find that.
And try, see if my eyes are a little less fatigued, and maybe I can find it.
Well, there's a chance that might be in that first vote in the House, which was...
No, it wasn't. It was
the first time it passed the House?
No. It was the vote that was taken in 1919.
It wasn't the 1918 vote.
No, it was the 1919 vote when Mr. Moore harmed.
Okay.
Because it was then that they withdrew. They said that's when ratification began, you see.
Yeah. Just in time for ratification.
No, I mean this was the last vote...
Before
we went to the States for ratification.
Uh-huh.
And the National... And the Organization Against Votes for Women withdrew from the campaign then, at the beginning of the ratification campaign, because they said we're not defeated. We never defeat this unless we have that 7 years limitation. It was clearly true that if we were defeated in 7 years, we would have tried 8 years, 9 years, and 10 years. And they said that's something that the women will accomplish.
What sort of campaign organization did you have for ratification? Did you just continue with your same organizations? And
yes.
Did people tend to zero in on states like Delaware and Tennessee that were the hoped-for final state?
Well, Delaware wasn't exactly the hoped-for final state, in my opinion. It was any state. We were hoping to get Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at the same time we worked in Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
because it was a little state. It was Mrs. Hillis's own state, you see.
Yeah.
And her brother was a senator. Her father had been Secretary of State from there, and it was a powerful political party. And we had all the women's organizations there back of us. I went up there and stayed through most of the campaign in Delaware. And
in Delaware or Connecticut?
There was the DuPont family were backing us. Nearly every DuPont woman was on our board up there.
In Delaware?
Yes. And there was a governor.
Remember the Delaware campaign?
She did.
For ratification, but the suffrages shows that she did work in it.
Well, yes, she was the key to it.
Well, you'll have to tell about that, because she didn't remember it.
How extraordinary.
Yeah.
She couldn't remember Delaware. I don't see what else she could remember.
In ratification.
She couldn't remember Delaware.
She remembered it during the suffrage campaign, but not during ratification.
You see, Mrs. Hillis was state chairman, and she conducted the campaign in Delaware. And I know that Mabel went up to help her and went over the state, and Betty Graham's swing went up and went all over the state. Mm-hmm. And I went up, and Mrs. Lawrence Lewis went up, a great many of us, because it's a small state, and we thought it wouldn't be difficult. And the National American Women's Suffrage Association there worked completely with us. There was no conflict at all. We knew them. Knew the president very well, and she worked just as harmoniously as anybody else. But we lost it anyway. We didn't. They didn't vote us down. They just didn't act.
Yeah. And they.
They just had so many problems about their orchards and their pruning of their.
Yeah.
Their trees and their peach trees and so on, and we went almost all over the state into every little village and talked to. Seemed to me we talked to almost every woman in the state. But they were absorbed in their own agricultural problems and such things.
The suffragist mentions that there was an argument going on in Delaware between the head of the Republican Party there and the Republican governor. There were two factions in the party, and the governor was very strong for suffrage, and the head of the party, the chairman of the state committee, was determined to fight the governor on every issue, and so...
Did you say that in the suffragist?
Yeah, in fact, I think it was one of your editorials in the suffragist. I wondered if you might remember that.
I don't see how that...
Dan Layton, state chairman of Republican Party in Delaware, was opposing the suffrage amendment because he was having a factional fight with the governor. This was just briefly explained in the suffragist. And, well, at any rate, you lost Delaware.
Yes, I didn't realize, though, that I hardly see how that could have been. And I don't think I wrote an editorial to that effect. Somebody else must have written it. But it
was.
Because I think the DuPont family were all Republicans, and it was a powerful, very powerful family. And his Ali family were all Democrats, and that was the other great political family. And I remember talking to Governor myself. I think he was a Republican.
Yes, and he was all for it.
I know he was.
And even the National Republican Committee held a meeting and passed a resolution for the Delaware State Committee to get behind suffrage, and they still wouldn't do it. But the governor continued in his...
As I say, as I recall, they didn't vote. They just let time slip by with their agitation over other subjects.
Yeah. Then on June 23rd, President Wilson appealed to Tennessee in a telegram to Governor Roberts.
That's right.
And I wanted to ask you, were you very worried about all the matters that were going through the courts at this time? There was a question that came up of whether women would be allowed to vote in the election because the states hadn't had a chance to pass their election qualification laws to cover women, like the poll tax and the literacy test and all those.
Well, you see, it was put in the amendment itself. Congress had the power to enforce this by appropriate legislation or something like that. And we went to see Senator Walz of Montana, who was probably supposed to be the greatest constitutional lawyer. And we said, what should we do now to provide for what you're talking about. And he said, oh, you'll do nothing. He said, there's no question about this at all. This will go. We don't have to consider this. Congress is not going to take any action directing the states what to do. They'll do what they want. Each state do what it wants. So we never had any trouble about that.
It the Supreme Court did rule in your favor on one state. I think it might have been Ohio, as I remember. And yes, it ruled in your favor before.
There was some technical point, and in that case, Mrs. Lawrence Lewis got her son, who was this lawyer, as I told you, mm-hmm. and who was a young lawyer, and he was in the firm, I guess, if not in the firm, he was in the, he knew very well, William Draper Lewis, who was the dean of the University of Pennsylvania Law School, and a great mm-hmm. constitutional lawyer. So Mr. William Draper Lewis and her son, Shippen Lewis, and I think they got a third lawyer, they had just handled that Ohio case for us, so we didn't bother with it.
Oh, great. The thing I noticed was that you had said, let's in the suffragists, we better get two more states, just in case the ratification in these states proves
we got one more, and that was Connecticut.
Yeah, after Tennessee. Well, after...
Well, now it seems to me that as far as your thing, that you really have covered the whole field pretty well from the beginning till the end.